So I am Anna Cates, and I'm going to talk about my master's work I did with Matt Ruark over the last couple of years. We had a really neat long-term cropping systems trial to work in. This is called the Wisconsin Integrated Cropping Systems Trial, and it's been in place since 1989. The theory behind WICST, as we call it, is to represent holistic management systems. So you don't have a factorial design where tillage and rotation are replicated alone, but instead you have whole management systems where these factors vary in ways which are realistic to the environment, which is southern Wisconsin. We separate these into two main systems, the grain systems and the forage systems. The grain systems are based on farmers which are dependent on cash grain sales for their income. The first is the conventional corn system, which is tilled, and that's continuous corn every year. The second is a two-year rotation of corn and soybean, which is strip till in the corn and no-till in the soybean. The third is an organically managed system of corn, soy, and wheat. So this doesn't receive any inorganic fertilizer, and it doesn't receive any herbicide. It's tilled for weed control. The forage systems are meant to be representative of Wisconsin's dairy industry, so they have a lot of alfalfa, which is important for cattle feed. There's a three-year alfalfa, one-year corn, an organically managed two-year alfalfa, one-year corn, and a rotationally grazed pasture, which is mostly C3 cool season grasses and does have heifers on it in the summer. The soil type here is the Plano silt loam, which is a classic prairie-derived mollisol with a pretty thick, fertile upper layer. This was formed in the prairie system that existed here between the last ice age 10,000 years ago and cultivation maybe 200 years ago. And you can see from this paper by Elder Paul, if you look just at the central column of total organic carbon mean residence time, you can see that at Arlington, where our study site is located, we're still cycling some of that carbon that was fixed under the prairie system. This is really old carbon that's still in the system. However, we know that we're losing some of that carbon over the course of this trial. This was Greg Sanford's PhD work, and it shows here on the y-axis the change in soil carbon between the initiation of WICS in 1989 and 2009 soil samples. The six different systems are on the bottom here, and you can see that the three grain systems are all below zero, which means they've all lost carbon over the 20 years of that trial. You can see that the corn alfalfa system seemed to be hovering at a stasis, and the pasture system may be gaining a little bit of carbon. So what Matt and I were trying to do in this study is to take this systems trial, which is on an extremely productive soil, which is widespread across the Midwest, and try to understand better what pools carbon and nitrogen are being collected in to see if we could better understand how carbon and nitrogen are cycling. So I'm going to talk about two different kinds of organic matter measurements today, both particulate organic matter, carbon and nitrogen, and aggregate fraction carbon and nitrogen. The first is a particulate organic matter. That we think of as a fresh, labile fraction of soil organic matter. It's been shown to be pretty similar to recent plant inputs to the system. And the way we derived the POM was by completely dispersing the soil and sodium hexametaphosphate in these little bottles and then filtering it at 53 microns, so POM with anything greater than 53 microns. When we looked at the carbon and nitrogen in POM in these systems, we found some pretty interesting patterns at 0 to 25 centimeters, but nothing very significant at 25 to 50. So we're going to focus on that top depth for the rest of the presentation. You can see that the highest values are found in the pasture system, and that the lowest values are found in these grain rotations, particularly the corn-soy and the corn-soy-wheat rotation. These patterns are fairly similar to those that Greg Sanford showed in the overall soil organic carbon change over 20 years. So it may be that the POM carbon and nitrogen are a significant part of why soil organic carbon is either being lost or maintained. The other thing we think has a big effect on whether POM is being maintained in the system is the biomass carbon which is returned to the system. At WICST, we have 20 years worth of data estimating the harvest and biomass in these systems. So what we did is we took the carbon from the below and above ground biomass and made a correlation with the POM C and POM N. The darker circles are the below-ground biomass carbon, and you can see a positive relationship with both palm carbon and palm nitrogen. And the other thing you can see is that those below-ground biomass carbon dots are separated into two distinct groups. And the higher values in below-ground biomass carbon are all the systems which include some perennial crops, either the alfalfa corn rotations or the pasture. And then this lower group is the annual crop rotations, either continuous corn, corn soy, or corn soy wheat. So I think we have a serious effect of including any perennials in rotation, really giving us a bump in below-ground biomass, which in turn seems to be related to the amount of palm carbon and nitrogen the systems maintain. This negative relationship with above-ground biomass, I think, is largely driven by these four points on the bottom, which represent the four replicates of the grazed pasture plot. That doesn't have a lot of above-ground biomass, but it has a lot of below-ground biomass, and that's pulling that relationship into a negative line. The next kind of organic matter I'm going to talk about is aggregate organic matter. And this gets at the physical mechanism of protecting organic matter in the soil. This cartoon is meant to represent several aggregates in the soil. If you think of this cluster and this cluster, each as a macro aggregate made up of several components. I represented micro aggregates as having these parallel lines in them, which might be clay micelles. We think that aggregates probably form around a piece of organic matter which is sticky enough to attract clay, and then that organic matter is in turn protected by the clay around it. Either microbes can't access the organic matter when it's surrounded by clay particles, or the conditions inside an aggregate aren't conducive to microbial respiration, and so the organic matter stays in the soil for a longer period than it would if it wasn't aggregated. The other big mechanism for holding things, two other big mechanisms, are these films of organic material, which might be root exudates or bacterial exudates. They're extremely varied. And then things like fungal hyphae and root hairs, actual stringy things which literally tie smaller aggregates into larger aggregates. This is really only a factor in macroaggregate formation, these root hairs and fungal hyphae holding things together. And you can imagine that makes macroaggregates much more vulnerable to tillage disturbance, because while tillage isn't going to disrupt these films, it's going to disrupt those stringy things and actually break them apart. So in order to try and look at all these different kinds of aggregates, we did a couple stages of physical separation. And this is all size-based aggregate fractionation. We took cores of fresh soil, composited them, and separated them by wet sieving into three size classes. The macroaggregates were greater than 250 microns, the microaggregates were 53 to 250, and the silt and clay was anything less than 53 microns. For the second step, we tried to get at those components of macroaggregates. We dispersed the macroaggregates using this device on a shaker, which completely broke up the particles such that we had a coarse palm fraction at greater than 250 microns, an occluded microaggregate fraction at 53 to 250, and an occluded silt and clay fraction at less than 53 microns. So as we look at this data, I'm going to point out that you'll see the free silt and clay, the free microaggregates, and then these three occluded fractions, occluded silt and clay, occluded micros, and occluded coarse palm, and those three together will make up the macroaggregates. The other thing I want to say about this method is that this coarse palm fraction is not very similar to the palm that we separated in the first analysis. It's only from the macroaggregates, and it's a larger size class. And we found that it was a really small fraction of the soil overall and not as sensitive to management as the palm we separated in the first size class. In the first analysis. So this figure shows the distribution of the soil into the aggregate fractions. The total soil weight is here on the y-axis, adding up to 100%, and the six systems across the bottom. The main thing that jumps out here is that the organic corn soy wheat system has less soil in macroaggregates and less soil in microaggregates within macroaggregates. And that seems to be coming from, instead, it has a lot of free silt and clay. So that makes perfect sense in a system which receives a lot more tillage. The aggregates don't have a chance to form because the binding agents are literally being broken up. When we look at carbon and nitrogen stock in these aggregates, it gets a little bit more complicated. In this case, I don't have it represented as 100% of carbon, but as the total carbon stock in each system, or the total nitrogen in this lower figure. You can see that organic corn, soy, wheat still has lower values than some of the other systems in its macroaggregate carbon and nitrogen and the occluded microaggregate carbon and nitrogen. So that's this darkest part of the pink. And you can see that the continuous corn is also a little bit depleted in the nitrogen in macroaggregates. So at this point, I became surprised by these results because I thought systems which were either strip-tilled or had some alfalfa would look more different from a continuous corn system or from a pasture system. But instead, we have this big gradient of results. And I think that shows the resiliency of this mollisol to continue to protect soil to some extent, even when it's getting tilled once every 3 years, once every 2 years, or once every 20 years. It doesn't seem to make that much difference on this aggregate carbon protection. So the data here that I've showed showed that palm carbon and palm nitrogen were greater in perennial pasture and less in the grain production, that was driven by inputs, and that aggregate protected carbon and nitrogen were less in organic grain rotations, but not in the conventional grain rotations relative to the perennialized rotations. There's a lot of gray area there. And that all these systems are losing soil organic carbon, which dates to the prairie ecosystem. I think the broader take-home messages from this data are that it takes a long time to reach equilibrium. We have this soil organic carbon, which is still decreasing. We have these aggregate distributions, which are similar. Maybe if we came back in 50 years, they would be more different. And then the other thing is that the fact that these systems are losing carbon and have a similar ability to protect soil carbon suggests some skepticism about models which show rapid soil organic carbon accumulation after management change in annual cropping systems. The one system which is protecting soil organic carbon here is a pasture, which looks a lot like the prairie that built the soil carbon in the first place. So it may be we need systems which really protect that free palm in order to move it through into more stable and protected pools. Thanks to all my collaborators, especially Dr. Posner, who started and maintained the Wicks trial till his death in 2012. And thanks to everybody who worked on this with me and my funding sources. I'll take your questions.
We have a few minutes for questions.
Okay. In the back.
Are they planning to continue these same rotations going forward, or is there any idea that they're going to maybe integrate some of the cropping system with a grazing system?
There is grazing in that perennial system, but there's not grazing on the others. The alfalfa is cut for hay, which is pretty typical in most dairies in Wisconsin. There is, you know, an ongoing debate about the value of maintaining systems for longer versus making systems more relevant or interesting for different questions. And right now, they're pretty much maintaining the systems as they are. Well.
I wonder if you could speak to the role of newer organic pools.
That's a good question. The alfalfa corn rotations receive some manure, but the organic grain system only receives pelletized chicken manure. And I think that other studies which have shown great aggregation or great accumulation of palm and organic systems are often manured from my literature review, and I think that that does make a huge difference. But I didn't set up to compare manure versus non-manure, so I'm not sure I can say any more particularly about that. Yeah.
One more minute for questions.
Okay.
Thank you very much.